Last but not least, we bring you the one, the only, the two-time Joust champion, John Bruno. How you doing, John?
Hey, what's up, Tiny? How you doing?
I'm doing good. We're very fortunate to have you on the show. You are the first champion we've had on this show. We've had a couple regional champions, but not a Joust champion yet.
Well, now you have somebody who's been both.
All right. Sounds perfect. So let's get right into it. I'm wondering if you could talk to us about a bit about the deck that you brought, especially the one you brought to the Melee.
That was my Netrunner deck.
So you didn't play in the Melee.
No, I did not play in Melee.
Why didn't you end up playing in the Melee?
Because I believe that Melee is lame as a competitive event. I have a lot of fun playing it with a group of friends where everybody is trying to win the game. And everybody is trying to screw everybody else over. That makes it more fun. Where deals are made at tables and broken at the table. Where everybody has an equal chance going into that game. And I don't say that just based off of this year's results or past year's results. It's just that I want to win a game based on my merits and my decision making. Not by other things that people do because they mess up and I lose because of that. Or worse, if they just give it away to somebody else. So I don't play Melee competitively.
Okay, fair enough. And how'd you end up doing in the Netrunner tournament?
Pretty freaking awesome. I was really surprised. I've only been playing it for about a month, and I ended up placing third overall. So I was one of the top four and got the very cool acrylic ID cards.
So in that month, you did extensive play testing, analyzing the meta. You came in ready, right?
Yeah. No, not really. Just played it and went in and played it like everybody else, and everybody's kind of all the same place. I mean, it's only been out since, you know, really late July, early August, so everyone's pretty much the same place. But I played it probably a good 30-plus games.
All right, nice. Okay, so getting a little bit more serious, what was the deck that you brought to Joust that you were able to win with?
I played with the Targaryen Knights of the Hollow Hill deck.
Okay, and when did you settle in on that being the deck that you were going to bring?
Actually, to be honest, I've been working on it for a long time. I started way back in May when I was going to play on my second regional of the season. I ended up playing a total of four. I had just won the first one down in Kingdom Con in April with a Martell Knights of the Hollow Hill, and I wanted to do something different. Last year at KublaCon, I won a regional with Lannister, and at Gen Con, I made top 8 with Greyjoy Winter. So I hate playing the same deck twice. So I really like to try to perfect the deck and make it good. And so I played Knights of Hollow Hill with Targaryen the last three regionals I played, winning the last regional, placing top 4 in another regional with Targ Knights of Hollow Hill. So basically, I wanted to take that deck and keep changing and tweaking. And as more and more cards came along, it just made it better and better.
All right, and how did you think it was going to perform going in?
Honestly, I told people that I never have a high opinion of myself in terms of how successful I'll be. My goal is always to make a top 8. I never, ever think about winning beforehand. When people ask me, what card are you going to design when you win? I never think about that, really. I truly never do. I really expected it to do pretty well because in the test games I've done with it where I played about 20 to 25 at home before going to Worlds, it did really, really well, and I liked the way it played, and it really was the most fun deck I've ever played back home. I mean, I never had a deck where I felt, this is so much more fun, because it was like every game was a totally different game. There are so many pieces, the way that the pieces move and change around, that even though it's the same deck with the same cards, each game feels like a totally different game than the one before.
All right. Do you know anyone that told you going in that they thought you were going to win the event with that stuff?
I have to think long and hard about that. I like thinking hard about Tiny Grimes. He probably told me I'd have a good chance to win with this deck.
All right, fair enough. Let's go into a little bit of detail about the deck. Are there any cards that you would say, this was my MVP card, or cards that these specific cards carried the day? Or was the deck just so solid all the way through that you felt like, all the cards had their MVP moments.
Definitely that. I mean, there are a lot of cards that had different MVP moments, which should happen in a very good overall type of deck, because if your deck is built around like one character, like we've seen lots of decks built around the Red Viper, or built around Gaston Grey, or built around any type of Mirror Reed, Winter, Summer, whatever it may be, sometimes those decks shut down when they don't draw the pieces they need. The thing I like about this deck is I like to feel like there is a variety of cards in it that help me win. But if I had to narrow it down to a few cards, I'd have to say the overall number one card was Aegon's Hill. That would be my favorite card in the whole deck. That was so strong, just to be able to look at people's hands and have the knowledge of knowing what they had in their hand besides killing a character. The other cards that were MVP-type cards were Waste Their Time, which sounds like a terrible card, but again, the knowledge that's built into that card is amazing. Also, First Note Winner. I have a little favoritism towards that card. And I'd also say the Street Waste. The Street Waste are just amazing for recursion.
So are there any sort of secret cards you put in the deck that you thought were going to surprise people? I mean, I know Hatchling's Feast seemed to surprise one of your opponents who had to take a pretty close look at the card. But were there any other cards that were a bit secretive?
Definitely Waste Their Time. I mean, nobody ever sees that card. I guarantee you I'm the only one that had that in their plot deck at Worlds, and I'm sure anyone, probably the only one who ever even thought of that card. Actually, I know I wasn't the only one who had it, because Ryan Jones, a teammate from San Diego, also had the card, because we had kind of shared ideas before going to Worlds. But yeah, nobody's ever thinking about playing that card, Waste Their Time, because the stats sound terrible at 2-1-1. So it sounds terrible, but when it sounds like a 4-3-1 plot because of Knights of All Hill, it's amazing. I'm sure Recruitment probably caught a lot of people off guard when I played it. Anytime you play a card where somebody says, "What does that do?" who's been playing the game for a long time, you know you have a card that is a surprise card. So Recruitment and Waste Their Time are probably the two biggest surprise cards.
Okay. Yeah, I've noticed that Waste Their Time is quickly becoming just a standard plot for this deck. I know maybe five people that are going to major events, and since they know that I know you, they've been saying, "Oh, can you help me with this deck a little bit? Can you play against me?" And every person I play against opens with Waste Their Time every time. And this is especially funny to me because I'm sure, as you know, I wasn't all that sold on that card going in, and I'm still not all that sold on the card. But
I know.
But you have made it the industry standard.
Even Eric Bretzloff said that it was basically a pretty crappy card, and he doesn't know why I would ever put that in a deck, but somehow I made it work.
Well, that's the magic of being you. So I have another question about your deck. You have two one-ofs of kind of unusual cards have one-ofs. Like, for instance, You only have one to be a dragon. Why would you choose to only put one of an event like that in your deck?
Mostly because, although to be a dragon is a great card, and the to be of events really aren't played that often. I mean, to be a wolf is probably the most played of the to be of cards. To be a dragon might be second, but nobody ever really plays it. I decided to, originally when I was building the deck, I had some kind of variation of the number of to be a dragons, ambush from the plains, and recruitments. And I would have anywhere from 6 to 9 of them total in my deck. And what I found was I ended up drawing some of them too early, especially like if I had a to be a dragon, because I didn't always lead off every single game with Waste Their Time. It really depended on what my opponent was playing. So I didn't want to have like two to be a dragons in my opening hand or second hand. I haven't even played Waste Their Time yet. Actually, the other to be a event that's played a lot, of course, is to be a Kraken for Greyjoy. And there's been a lot of games where I don't start off with a military battle plot, and I'll have one or two of the to be a Krakens in my hand, and then I feel I'm forced to play the to be a dragon. I mean, the to be a Kraken, so I don't want to be forced to play to be a dragon. So if I had one of it, if it came up, it came up. If it didn't, no big deal.
And so basically, it had so much redundancy with Ambush from the Plains and Recruitment that they satisfied the same role to a degree.
Yeah, the thing I liked was to be a dragon gets things from my dead pile. To be an Ambush from the Plains gets things from my discard pile. Recruitment gets stuff from both.
Right.
And to be a dragon lets me get uniques back. where recruitment only lets me get non-uniques. So I was hoping that just having the right combination of those, whether it was anywhere between 4 to 6 of those cards, combined with the Street Waves, would give me the flexibility to get things from my dead or my discard pile.
Okay. I've had a number of people say, what's with the one Sellsword? Why would you have one of some random, terrible-looking card in your deck?
You know, that's a great question. It's a card that actually I had thought of putting in my deck. It was always kind of like on the bubble. I like the card a lot. But playing it randomly with, you know, my local opponents, like you, who had it in their deck, you know, when it comes out, you think about, eh, maybe I'll try that card. Maybe I'll see it. But here's the thing that people don't think about with that card. It's actually, in my opinion, like having a fourth copy of the Hatchling's Feast. If you play it on the turn when you have a threat from the north out, for one simple influence instead of three, you're getting rid of every single two strength ally and refugee on the table. So they happen to have Serio out during the challenge phase. They have, if you're playing Martell, and they have the House Messengers. Every house has two strength refugees. Lannister, the House Boltons for Stark. You know, the Maesters, if you happen to be playing the Maester, the Maesters of War. I actually wouldn't touch those guys. But a lot of the ones that are refugees or allies, you can just get rid of them for one influence on a threat from the Northern. So I actually looked at it as having a fourth Hatchling Feast that could actually be a great character. And it's awesome because in my final game against Derek, it was actually a pretty key card.
What happened in that moment where you were able to play that card?
Well, I don't know if Eric will realize it or admit it, but I kind of talked him into playing the Grey Wind that was in his hand, which I knew he had Grey Wind because I've been looking at his hand all game with all the great hand cards I had. So, like Confession and Aegon's Hill. So, I had no characters in my dead pile, and I had one character up, and that was Viserion. And I didn't even, honestly, pay attention to his revealed plot, which happened to be the first Nova winner. But I didn't really pay attention to that plot either. What I was trying to do is, when I put that guy into play, and he's sitting there at one strength, I said, oh, I don't know why I played that. It's, you can kill that. You got a Grey Wind in your hand. So I guess you're going to kill him. So something like that, I said. And I wanted him to kill my Sellsword because I needed to have a character in my dead pile so I can trigger the To Be a Dragon that was in my hand. Because I wanted to play To Be a Dragon, use Viserion twice, and also to mock Tiny Grimes for saying that it was a pretty crappy card. So Eric did put the Grey Wind on a character and killed somebody and killed the Sellsword. Because he killed the Sellsword, I was able to attack with with Drogon, kill his only character he had on the table, used to be a dragon, stand Viserion, do it again, and I brought the Sellsword into play, and I also got an entry challenge out of him, too.
Wait, so are you saying you play mind games during Game of Thrones games? I am stunned.
I know, it wasn't the only one that happened in that game either. I had another one against Eric that he didn't see coming either. But I know Eric likes to mess with people's heads. When during a game, he feels like he is affecting you. And honestly, he never bothered me in either of the games that we played. Even when he has his Star Wars Legos tokens out, or Star Wars Lego figurines out to use his power counters just to mess with people. None of that stuff, you know, should get to you. It's not just a game. I just kind of sit back and say, whatever. But also later in the game, I did the same. I did another little trick that he didn't see coming, and I did on purpose trick.
What was the little trick you did?
Well, he had two characters up. One of them was Serio. I believe the other one was Hodor. And I had Viserion only, and I attacked first and did a power challenge. And I said, I'll do a power challenge, and then kind of like I tried to catch myself and say, no, I'll do a military challenge. And I said power first. I got to stick with power. So I did that, and he let the power go, and I got the power in the post. And then he came back and attacked me with Serio, thinking Serio's safe now. I could have done military first and let him kill the character, but he could have killed Hodor, not that big a deal. But I wanted to make sure Serio stayed on the table. If I had done that, Serio would have came at me, and I would have, I could have lost a challenge or whatever, but I had long lances in my hand. So I wanted Serio to attack me and have him think that he's going to come through and have Serio come through for free. And he attacked the Serio, and I put long lance into play and stood Viserion and defended the challenge and took out another location. So I made sure, this way I made sure Serio stayed on the table because I had Valor coming up as a plot.
Yeah, you sure are a tricky demon. I can certainly attest to that one. All right, so were there any cards you were on the fence about? I know getting a Targ deck down to 60 cards is always a chore. Is there anything that almost made the deck that if you were going to tweak the deck at all, you would consider putting in?
Let's see. There were times I thought about putting in. It wasn't more of what I put in or what I took out. It was more sometimes like having an extra copy of a card. Like, I did consider, because like I did put the deck at 63, and really the last two cards that went in was the Sellsword, and because I had it at 61 originally. It was the Sellsword, and I'm trying to remember the other, a second copy of Company of the Cat. Because I was playing a 61 card version of the deck for a little bit. The week before I went to Worlds, I added both of those in. I also had a couple extra of, I had three recruitment, I believe, and two to be a dragon. There was one time I had three to be a dragons, but they just, like I said, seemed like overkill, and I went them all in the deck. So I did think about pulling, and just when I was there in Minnesota and making my deck list, I really thought about pulling the Sellsword for Meraxes, but I kind of already felt like I had pulled enough characters out for other tricks that I didn't want to pull too many characters out.
And you are running two copies of Meraxes already, is that
right? I only had two copies of Meraxes and two copies of Bane of Ice. Okay. And I know I didn't have enough draw, but see, the thing is, when people look at that and says, you know, how do you get draw? The truth is, recursion can be almost as good, if not better. Because when you're drawing, you're going to get possibly a location or something you can't use. When you're doing recursion, you're probably going to get something back you want to play again.
Yeah, were you able to get that little trick going with the Street Waif, and then you deploy the Long Lance to stand the Street Waif again, then ambush somebody in, stand the Street Waif again?
Yeah, one game I did, pre-plot, just in case there's Valor something coming up, I did a Street Waif, got a card back. Doran, then she didn't die. Then during the, after plots were over, I jumped in the Lances and stood the Street Waif and did the Street Waif again. Then during the draw phase, I jumped in a Dragon Knight, stood her, drew again. During the marshalling phase, we both played a character. She stood and drew a card. I mean, I got another card with her. In the challenge phase, I ambushed somebody in, stood her, did again. The standings all because of the Long Lances, which is once per phase. So I did use one Street Waif six times in one round.
And did they give you much and more all six times by any chance?
No, see, that's the other thing. I will tell you that I think, again, this is my opinion. Everything I'm telling you here is my opinion. It worked for me that day. It may not work for other people. The one thing I do want to state to everybody is that when I give people suggestions or ideas or I talk about my stuff, it worked for me. You know, I can never say that it's the best thing to do. I never feel like I have all the answers. I just know it worked for me, or either that day or I feel it works for me, you know, more often. But anyway, I do feel like people use much and more the wrong way. I mean, both games I played against Eric. The first time I played Eric, I lost to him. The second time I played against Eric, obviously in the finals, I won. He did this, and a couple of the other guys try to do it too, where they do pre-plot much more because they think the early card advantage you're going to get by doing rule by decree is critical. And to be honest, I think that losing those four cards that I'm going to have at the beginning that I gained from much more, the one extra one plus the three others in my deck, most of the time doesn't set me back because I do have some recursion and I can get some of those things back anyway. Yeah, I mean, I know it's a hand hit right away, but you're still going to get two more cards you don't see. So you will have six cards going into marshalling, which sometimes that's kind of like all I need to get going. But much more is so much better later on after you do other effects, like whether it's first no, bouncing stuff back to hand, then playing, you know, much more, and then having more cards in hand, or do it during the marshalling phase, or the challenge phase, so you can get some better cards to help you set up your stuff or get your effects that you need, like an extra ambush character, for example, for my deck. So, anyway, I don't think much more is the card that people think it is in terms of just for a Roll by Decree combo, but it's an amazing card because of all the stuff it nets you. I can't think of one time at all that I played much more where I didn't get something useful that I needed, and especially the Targ Knights of a Hollow Hill deck, where you don't get that initial setup, helping to look for cards to get your influence you need or a character you need during the challenge phase is what makes much more so strong. But yeah, it was given back to me quite a bit.
Yeah, it is interesting how once somebody comes up with an idea like, oh, you can do much and more into rule by decree. Everyone jumps on it, and then just no matter what the matchup is, just sort of sticks to this plan. Like, I could see that being pretty useful against maybe a Greyjoy deck or something if they don't have any draw. But against a deck with draw, I would think you'd want to wait. Like, especially, say, a Martell Knights of the Hollow Hill. If you pre-plot your much and more and then rule by decree, you may really be regretting that, say, two turns later when they have a 12-card hand again.
Exactly.
Okay, what do you think about the Street Wraith Long Lances combo? Do you think it needs to be looked at or tweaked at all, or do you think it's actually okay as it is?
Again, the Street Wraith is just a character. I mean, it has no immunity. It's got one strength. It's, it's an ally. There are so many things that you could do to it. But at the same time, it's a strong combo, but you should be able to deal with the character. I got to say, though, I did build that into my deck because I wanted to be able to have access to the Street Wraith all the time, which is another reason why there's recruitment and ambush from the plane and to be a dragon. If she gets discarded or it goes in a dead pile, I have ways of getting her back. So I can see Long Lances being, have some restrictions put on it, you know, at some point, because I do think there will be a lot of abusive combos for it, but it's no worse than, like, a Mazer deck that can discard your deck because you can do it once per phase. You know, we're just talking about standing a character. I still think the Mazer Chain for, I think it's a Steel Link, right? The one that discards cards. I don't remember which one it is. But I think that's worse. And that's still once per phase.
Yeah, just imagine if Long Lances wasn't once per phase.
I know.
So, there's been a little chatter I've noticed that people have been saying, wait, Bruno's deck wasn't a 60-card deck?
So I'm
just wondering how it feels to be a noob and win the joust with a 63-card deck.
Well, I did win my first championship with a 64-card deck. I've won many regionals with in between a 60 and 64-card deck, so it's nothing new to me.
So what's your theory on deck size, then? Is there a particular type of deck that you think should definitely be at 60, and is there another type of deck that you feel like can exceed that without much of a problem?
Wait, did you say deck size?
Deck size.
Oh,
yes.
Okay, deck size. Okay.
Thanks for the clarification.
No problem. It's a whole totally different philosophy now. I have a different picture in my head. But anyway, it just depends. I mean, I really, would prefer to run a 60-card deck. But sometimes I look at the deck and say, okay, if that one extra card I add in is a draw card, then maybe I've improved the deck's chances. I don't know. I mean, obviously, as a math major and somebody who understands, the mathematics and the probability, you still want to run a 60-card deck. But those are the same people who always want to run three copies of a card. And, they want to make sure they get it, whether it's an event, especially an event or something. If you have other cards that do the same thing, it's not that big a deal. You can see on my deck, just take, like you said, with recruitment, ambush from the planes, and to be a dragon. I mean, those are three cards that are all very similar in terms of getting a character back, but I didn't run three of any one of them. So it was kind of good having a variety where I could use either one. I don't know. You have to play a deck for yourself. The truth is, you can say to yourself is, all right, for the person who always has this strict philosophy of running a 60-card deck, do you win with it? Some people do, some people don't. Greg Atkinson, when he won in 2004, had a 75-card deck, and he was world champion. So, it just kind of depends on what your play style is. I don't have a problem adding a few more. 64 seems to be my limit. I don't like going over 64. And for the last year and a half, I really hadn't gone over 63. I tried to keep it at 60 to 61. So, I mean, I did win, two regions this year, and both times I won, I had 61 cards in my deck. When I went to Gen Con, I made the top 8. I was 5th place overall with a strictly 60-card deck. So, just depends. I mean, if you have room to take a card out, do it. I mean, I could have easily made this deck 60 to 61. Like I said, I could have easily pulled the Cell Sword. He could have easily come out. That wasn't, that big a deal. But I said, nah, I want to try it. So I left him in.
All right. Yeah, you've definitely influenced me in that regard. I used to think 60 was the max. And then what would happen is I would do some testing with a 60-card deck. We'd talk about it. You'd say, what? If you added two copies of this one event, that deck would go from great to really great. And then I would not have time to figure out what to take out, and I would just put him in. So it seems like lately I've been about 62 myself.
I'm glad I had some influence on you.
All right, well, were there any specific matchups you were worried about with the deck going into the event?
Rush decks, I think. I think rush decks could possibly give a trouble, just because you probably need a couple turns to get things set up. I have played against a couple rush decks. I played against a Stark Siege deck before. I had played against a Baratheon semi-power grab type deck. And, I mean, if those decks could have been tuned a little bit better, you know, I could have lost to them, but I think those are the ones that I was afraid of the most. Any kind of Lannister, especially Lannister Neil, I felt great about because, you know, most of the time I'm going to win initiative and I'm going to choose to go second, and most of my characters come into play during the challenge phase, so the characters would be unaffected by Lannister that way. Martell I felt really good about, and also Martell with Gaston Grey, because the cards would be... I could burn down the nobles if I needed to burn down the nobles, and I wasn't worried about it, you know? So I wasn't too worried about getting hosed by those cards. The other card, too, was like Greyjoy Winter and Stark Winter. I felt like I had pretty good matchups with those. Stark Siege, because of the strength of their characters. I mean, Threat from the North is such a powerful card. So if you have a deck built around a lot of two strength characters or less, it's definitely going to help you out.
What about the mirror matchup? Were you worried about that at all?
I was more worried about how long it would take. You know, and it, for that type of game, it really depends on who gets their influence faster or who gets Aegon's Hill faster. Because what can wreck an ambush heavy deck is Aegon's Hill. If you start pulling all those surprise cards out of the hand, it's not a surprise anymore.
So since you are worried about Aegon's Hill, I can only assume you had an extensive amount of location control?
Oh, heck yeah. And when I say heck yeah, I mean no, not at all.
Yeah, that's one of the differences in our builds, and I know I kept trying to convince you to put the newly made lords back in, as they were your idea to start with.
They were. Yeah, I did play the newly made lords over regional season in the deck. I mean, lots of things that two more gold is not that much for Targ Knights at Hollow Hill because you get that extra two gold. So I did have the newly made lord, but as I started to build this deck, it never made the cut. The same with Condemned by the Council, which I had a couple of times in there too. They were both on my bubble of cards that didn't make it. I figured, you know, two things. One, if there were any houses that had locations that were really, really, really annoying for me, I had two options: try to pull it out of their hand with a waste of time or confession, or number two, maybe intrigue it out, especially if you do like a search and detain where it might end up back in their hand again. I mean, if you do search and detain, and you bring it back to your hand, and you have confession, during the draw phase, you can just pull it out of their hand. So, that's just one possibility. That happened in one game.
Speaking of search and detain, did you just love being able to play that card again?
Heck yeah. It's still one of the best plots out there. I mean, it gives you a great advantage, and the card is offensive and defensive. Defensive by pulling a major character or whatever you need off of somebody, you know, out of their, put it back in their hand, and maybe you have a chance to pull it out again. On offensively, like to replay your characters again, whether the Dragon Thief, Company of the Cat, Long Lances, etc. And a save for Valor.
Right. I know. In the testing, it just felt so wonderful. I didn't realize how much I missed that card. All right. So, what was your pre-Worlds preparation like?
What I did was I went back to the hotel room and lubed down with Ryan Jones.
Hmm.
Oh, you mean before I went to Worlds?
Yeah, let's start with, how do you build a deck? Where do you start?
Well, like I said, I mostly had the Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill build around since regional. So if you look at my regional deck list and this deck list that I actually played, there may be like 20 cards that are actually still in the deck. So I really revamped it a lot. Basically, I had the idea that I really wanted to keep working with Recursion and the Street Waves. So to find as many different ways of standard as possible, that's what I wanted to do. That's how three times Two-Bayed Dragon ended up in the deck in the first place, because it was just another opportunity for me to stand her a few more times. And then I realized I need a Power Struggle card, so I considered Lineage and Legacy, because that's where most people will go to when looking for a Power Struggle plot. But then I was looking at, like, Waste of Time, and I'm just thinking about all that knowledge I get from looking at their hand, so I went from there. And mostly, I do try to build a plot deck first, before I really think about my deck. This deck, I wanted to have lots of control. So where I originally had cards like Retaliation and Men of Pride just for the 2-claim, they don't do anything other than give you 2-claim. Sure, they give you 4 gold, but they don't do anything. I wanted to make sure I had plots that had effects. Every single one of the plots could hit my opponent.
Fair enough. I know I just can't stop playing Loyalty Money Can Buy. How do you feel about that plot?
It's a pussy card, which I've told you many times.
Yeah. The funny thing is, lately in my testing, I've been finding I need it less and less. I think I'm just such a wimp that I don't want to get crushed that first turn that I just like having it in my deck just in case.
Wimp, pussy, whatever.
Yeah, well, what can I do?
Well, again, it's that's the nice thing about like a card like Waste of Time or Confession. A lot of times you want to play Loyalty because you are trying to protect your hand against the early claim. A lot of people end up running 2 claim plots in the first time, and so they're still going to get 1 claim. I feel like I'll do better if I can just kill that character instead of allowing him to come through, if that's a possibility for me. And it does, the knowledge and knowing what's in their hand lets me decide what my first turn is going to be. You know, so, I mean, how I'll play it after that. So, sometimes it's tough. I mean, only having the 4 gold. And when you play Winter as many times as I did on Saturday, I really only had 3 gold a lot of times first turn, whether I went first or second in the marshalling. So, you got to make your decisions based off of that. But the deck's not really based on using gold anyway.
Okay. Well, closely related to this, one of our listeners, Jeremiah, was wondering about metas. And he was asking, you know, who do you play with, who gives you competitive games, and who do you seek advice from?
That's a tough one. I mean, I feel like I'm very fortunate to play in an area in Los Angeles and San Diego that has a lot of great players. I mean, we really have a lot of top players in this meta. So whenever I'm stuck, the first thing I do is I ask Tiny Grimes, what would you do? And then I do the opposite. So then I feel much in pretty good shape like that.
That sounds like a good strategy, actually.
It does. It works really well. Honestly, though, Ram De Leon and Tiny Grimes probably give me the best feedback overall. And not just by them looking at my deck, because I don't ever give anyone my deck and say, hey, what do you think of this? I just played against them. And I think they're two of the top players in L.A., so I'll play them. And, I mean, Ram is definitely one of the top players I know. I mean, not just in Los Angeles, all across, you know, the United States. And he's proved that by placing second at Gen Con. I mean, he was in top 8 last year at Gen Con. So, you know, Ram's a pretty strong player. So by playing against you or Ram is where I'm mostly going to get most of my feedback. Then I get to get out of San Diego and play against great guys down there like John Krause and James Speck and learn a lot more about my deck.
How big of a role do you think having such a strong meta has on your success?
Well, I don't know, to be honest. I mean, I've seen some really small metas. I could take the meta in Iowa, because I think Jared Leopold and Jeremiah Dugan, when they're two of the best players that I know of in this game over the years, and they're sometimes like a meta of 2. You know, Matt Lay's got a meta of 1.5 in Nebraska. You know, there's him and half of Jesse Mariona. So, you know, and Matt's a great player. And back in the older days, like when I was playing in the mid-2000s in Los Angeles, and even when I won my championship in 2005, there really weren't lots of really strong players at that time, too. We had a good number of players, but not, like I would say, top-level players.
Okay.
So if you can get one person to play with, you know, and the two of you can, like, bounce off ideas of each other, that makes all the difference. And nowadays, we also got Skype, and we've got a huge community that communicates outside of, like, their area, too. So that helps a lot, too.
Moving on a little bit, now that you are a 2-time champion, where do you rank yourself in the pantheon of legendary Game of Thrones players?
Well, I guess I'd sound really arrogant if I said first, but I guess I'll be a little arrogant because I feel like I've earned it. I have to say it's myself and Greg Atkinson. Without a doubt, we've had the most success in this game. We're the only two-time Joust/World Champions. We both have we're probably like first and second in terms of number of regional wins over the years. So I like to think I'm first.
Okay.
If not maybe second to Greg.
I think I'm gonna agree with that. Yeah. I think in Missouri they can claim Greg as the greatest on the Two Champs and a Chump podcast. But over here in Los Angeles, I think John Bruno's the greatest.
Well, I will tell you that at the Worlds this Saturday, like when we're out afterwards, we're sitting around and drinking and stuff, and Greg did tell me, and before he got drunk, actually right after even the game, he really did say to me, John, I think without a doubt you are the best player that's ever played this game. So that was a high compliment to me. It meant a lot to me coming from Greg.
All right. Well, do you have anything else left in the game that you feel like you really want to accomplish, or do you feel like you've done everything you set out to do?
I never set out to do anything. The only thing I ever set out to do was play and have fun and have some kind of, you know, success along the way. And success has just been moderate. I mean, just winning some games. So I guess I've already set out what I wanted to do. I never, ever expected to win any championship, let alone win a second one. So I guess in that regard, I set my goals. In terms of what I still like to do, oh, I so much want to have a Melee championship.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. How about Staldeck? Is that on your radar at all?
Staldeck, you mean?
Yes, Staldeck, yeah. Not Staldeck.
Okay, I would love to go to Staldeck. Actually, in terms of doing something on in the future, that is something I would love to do. I have talked to a couple European players, either through, you know, online messages through Facebook or email, and have talked about possibly going and playing the next year. In fact, Greg Atkinson and Matt Leigh and myself, the three of us have talked about it fleetingly once about how cool it would be if maybe next year we went into that. So it is a possibility.
What about an overall title? I know you have a distaste for Melee, but does that draw you at all to grab an overall title?
Nope. Overall title means nothing to me. And I don't mean that mocking anybody who has one or who earned one, because, I mean, some people have. Like, for example, this year at Gen Con, you know, Dan won the overall title, and he definitely earned it. He ended up in the top in Melee and won Joust. I mean, he definitely deserved it. You know, last year, Corey, same thing. Corey won Melee, and Corey ended up overall, same thing. Although, you know, I don't take anything away from anyone who's won overall. There have been years where somebody has been given the overall title without having won a tournament. So, overall, and again, I'm not pointing that at anybody. I'm sure Eric will probably think it's going towards him, or maybe even Derek, who just won this weekend, the overall title in Worlds. I don't take that away from anybody. I mean, they had the highest combined amount of points, but it's like, hey, here's a title. You didn't win anything, but we're giving you a title. That's how it feels sometimes. So if it sounds, you know, again, arrogant, I don't mean it to sound the way. It doesn't hold a lot of meaning for me, just like Melee titles. Again, congratulations, you got a title, you got your name on a card, but it's not the same as going through a Joust field. The Joust field is so much harder to do. You're doing that all on your own. It's all really all on your own merits. Because you still have, no matter who builds your deck, what you did and where you got your deck from, you still have to go out there and play those games in front of you, and nobody else is there to assist you during that game. So that's why the first, from 2003 to 2007, the only title there was Joust, which is only just called then the World Championship, not Joust, the first time we saw it in 2008. That means a whole lot more to me, and I think most of our community respects that more. I understand what people say about Melee and how it reflects the game, and honestly, it does reflect the flavor of the game, but I don't think it should be a competitive title.
I've heard many describe you as a great ambassador for the game, and I would maybe even go as far as to call you the people's champ. I know watching the streamed video at Worlds, every single person in the room was rooting for you to beat Eric. I'm not sure if that's out of any sort of ill will towards Eric. It didn't seem like it. No one was saying anything bad about him. It was just you generate such a vast amount of goodwill that everyone was cheering for you. And how do you feel about that label? And is this something that you strive to do and take pride in? Or is it just a byproduct of how you approach the game?
I mean, it's just my nature in life. I mean, I'm a teacher. I'm used to working with people and putting other people's needs before your own. Before that, I was a childcare worker. I did that for 7 years while I went through college. So it's just my nature to always be looking out for other people and making sure other people's needs are addressed before you deal with your own. And that's how I always try to build up my community in the same way, is that give everything I have. Like, I would win prizes, and I would try to bring them home and run tournaments and share it with my community. Hopefully have them come out more. I'd always want to make help people with their decks if they ask me to. You know, it's just what I'd like to do as I try to be a good person overall. And that just carries over through the game. I mean, I want to have fun. I like joking around. But I never want to, like, screw anybody over, you know. I always would want to see the best for other people, especially my friends. You know, and I love this game. So I would always try to do my best for the game. So I can't really say if it comes from anywhere else other than what's inside me and the nature I am. But that's how I am. And maybe the way people root for me in, like, on the way streaming was, I guess, and watching the game, maybe the same way people root for Tyrion or Arya or any Davos or any other people's Jon Snow favorite character from the books, they're all a little messed up. You know, you got Jon's the bastard, Tyrion's the dwarf, Arya is out there all by herself and not the non-lady, Davos's finger's missing. You know, I'm that like everyday schlub sort of guy. So maybe that's what people root for more over than, you know, the beautiful, handsome people like Matt Lay.
Well, since you're such a helpful guy, what's the most important piece of advice you could give to someone who wants to become a Joust champ?
Don't listen to other people. Do what you want to do. Don't always just go to the online sites to take a deck and play the deck because somebody won a tournament with it. I mean, you just look at the Moonboy Classic this year, and right after that, everyone wanted to build Red Zyler's Stark Knights deck. In fact, I played against one at Worlds. So just because it works for somebody doesn't mean it's going to work for you. You got to make the deck your own, whether it's changing 5-10 cards, whether it's putting in cards that other people tell you suck, but you like it. And then when you're done with that, play it a bunch of times, you know, and get a better feel for the deck. And then you'll learn a little bit by little bit by little bit what you need to do. The other thing, too, is don't be totally stubborn either. If there is somebody who has some success or at least some, you know, more experience than you or has an idea, listen to it. You know, I mean, I still do that, even though, like, that's how the Seltzer got in the deck. Even though I would say, I don't think I want to put this card in. I think it's a stupid card. In the end, I said, yeah, I'll put one of it in.
All right. I think that's helpful advice. I have a couple of listener questions. Everyone got real excited when they heard that you were going to be interviewed for the podcast. And Kyle wants to know, Spice Girls or Taylor Swift?
I'd have to say neither one. I prefer some European bands, the new European girls band, the Saturdays. That's what I prefer. And just watch, they're going to become the United States. Remember, you heard it here first.
All right, I'll remember.
But definitely Taylor Swift. If I had to go for one, fine. Spice Girls are too old now.
Okay. Brian is wondering if you'd be willing to give us a glimpse at what card you might make.
All I can say is, because we're not supposed to talk about it, I know a card I really, really, really want to make, and whether it happens or not, I don't know. So I don't want to get my hopes too high, but let's just say that I like to make, there is a unique character I would like to make that does not have a unique version ever.
Ooh, tantalizing stuff right there. Chris was wondering what your thoughts on the House of Dreams agenda were.
I love the House of Dreams, and I think that too many people overreacted by calling it broken. I like the deck building options that it opens up to people, where you're going to start seeing more locations that people use that hadn't been played in a long time. There are going to be some people that are going to play the game and use it almost like a sideboard card. For example, I could totally see going to a tournament with maybe 3 really good, unique locations in my deck. And depending on what my opponent was playing, I could pick a different one each time. So I don't think a lot of people would really think about doing that. People are saying, no, I'm building this deck strictly because I want this particular card. I think in the end, we're going to see there are going to be a couple locations that, because of their early start, are going to be the top-level decks. But for the time being, I think it's great to have the overall flexibility of putting location in a deck you might not normally have played with. So in terms of the deck building that goes on, I think it's great. I do think its value is probably a little undercosted. It would have been maybe cool if the gold you got to spend was equal to the difference in 5 minus the cost of the location. That might have been a little more fair with it, but, you know, the advantage you get from that early setup is gone, you know, as the game progresses. So I think it's a fun card, and I also think it's not going to be as, you know, broken as everybody say it is.
So you heard it here. The Joust champion says it's not broken.
Same with Little Unless. Not as broken.
Now that Little Unless has been ruled on, Little Unless seems like a pretty terrible card, actually. I don't know if you would agree with that, though, John.
I don't know about terrible. I just don't think it's not going to be played as much as people think it is.
Okay. James from the San Diego meta is wondering, do you think it's rude to your opponents to drop from an event and potentially crush their strength of schedule?
Absolutely. I mean, if you feel like you're going into this tournament because you're going to win, playing the wrong game. You should be playing Game of Thrones because you enjoy the game. It makes absolutely zero sense to me to spend the money you spend to go travel to a major event, whether it's a regional, whether it's Gen Con, whether it's Worlds, and after 2 rounds, drop because you have no chance to win. That's crazy to me, because you are messing up somebody's strength of schedule who could go on to win. You should be going there because you want to play the game, because you enjoy the game, and you learn a lot more in losses than you do win. So if you play that out, you might actually learn a lot more about your deck and how to make your deck better and how to make your gameplay better, because you have a chance to play against good players. I mean, for the most part, Worlds brings out, Gen Con brings out, Regionals brings out the best in your area, best in the United States, best in the world. And you should continue playing in those games because you want to learn, not just because, you know, I can see at Gen Con there's other things to do, but if you specifically spent your money to go to a regional and go to Worlds when there's not much else going on there, it makes no sense to me to drop out. You're screwing somebody else over, and you're missing an opportunity to improve your game.
The last question is by Dennis, and he was wondering if you had any thoughts on the Melee DQ that happened.
My answer is yes.
Would you care to share them or not really?
No, I don't have any problem sharing with the way I feel. Melee in general is just set up to be collusion. It is. I mean, I'm not saying the 3 of those guys colluded. I didn't see any of their games. I didn't get to see video or, you know, how the game was played. Obviously, you have 3 friends at a table. There's going to be shenanigans going on. I don't care, you know, who it is. I mean, if I was at a Melee table with, John Krause, first of all, shoot me for being there in the first place. But if I was at a Melee table with John Krause, Ram DeLeon, and some person I don't even know, I'm going to do my best I can to screw that guy over every single time. So, and that's not even having said anything to Ram or John beforehand. So Melee in general just set up to involve collusion. And the rules are so subjective. So if I am blatantly out loud saying that I am trying to make somebody win or make somebody else lose, you know, then that's my fault for saying that stuff out loud. Like, for example, this is just something I heard somebody tell me. I cannot say that I heard this myself, but I did hear that one point one of the players in the Melee game said to one of the other players, friend at the Melee table, that it's okay if you win this turn, I'm okay taking second. And then that player did not win that turn, and then when the French guy got to play, and he had a chance to win, and the guy who said he was happy being second stopped him, he really wasn't happy being second, was he? But he was willing to let his friend play. So there is some sense of collusion right there, because you're purposely stopping somebody else from winning just so one of your friends can win when you were just saying a minute ago you're happy with being second. So if that conversation really took place, then that sounds like collusion to me. And I'm glad that they made the ruling, not because of the people who are involved, just because in general Melee needs to be fixed. So I think the best thing to come out of the collusion ruling has nothing to do with the people involved at all. It has a lot to do with this game is pretty lame, let's do something about it.
And let's be perfectly honest. If you were at a table with Ram and John, you would help them, but then you would stab them in the back to take the win, am I right?
I would make sure I won.
Yeah, okay. I assumed that would be the case.
Actually, no. If you were at the table, I'd make sure I won. Because Melee means nothing to me. I would definitely help John or Ram win if it meant something to them.
All right, well, let's move to the conclusion here then. What are your overall thoughts on Worlds? Was it better than you expected?
It was way better than I expected. I almost didn't go. I really wasn't going to go. I didn't think I'd be able to afford the expense of going. And I decided, like, last minute to be able to go. And I went, and it was 100 times better than I expected. I mean, the people at FFG, it's neat to know some of these people from the beginning when it was a really small company of, like, 20 people. And now to see it grow to a company of almost 100 people, I'm still know a good number of people there, you know, that I'll know by name or face, and they know me, too. It's great to have a company still at that size where they recognize players, and the players mean something to them. So when you go there, just to have that conversation and relationship with people, you know, in the game, in the company, who have nothing to do with Game of Thrones particularly, is pretty neat. But the center where they had it set up at was perfect, was great size-wise. Their facilities, you know, the store and everything, excellent. They rewarded us with Star Wars LCG box just for registering, pre-registering. That was amazing. I got a chance to play in two tournaments. I got to play in Netrunner and Thrones. Even the swag to get, the playmat was awesome. Card boxes were awesome. I mean, the prizes I get for, you know, finishing top four on both events was pretty cool. You know, just the experience of networking and meeting other people. I mean, there's still, I've been playing this game for a long time, and I still met new people that I hadn't met before. So the whole experience of going to something like Worlds, I would recommend it, highly recommend that for everyone. And honestly, FFG did run a pretty good event. They did. I mean, I have some suggestions for them, which I told them there, and they actually seemed willing to listen. It's even going to be expanded more than just like 2 days of gaming. They're talking about 4 days next year. So it'll give people a chance to play in more than one event. You know, again, the only negative is Melee needs to be fixed. I think, you know, Melee as a competitive format just blows, and I'd like to see it just totally gone along with the overall world, and just have the world champion be Joust. But other than that, it was a pretty awesome event.
Do you have any other specific suggestions that you would like to be a little bit different for next year?
Well, I mean, some I shared with them. I'd rather let them listen to those ideas and see what they think. But in terms of for players, I mean, just the opportunity to be able to play in more than one event.
Okay. And next year you'll be playing the champion of Netrunner, Star Wars, and Game of Thrones. Is that correct?
I'm going to try to play in all three if they don't overlap. Unless I go to Stalag, then I'll use my money to go there.
Okay. Do you think it would be interesting to have some sort of overall weekend champ? Say the person who does the best and the most events, or do you think that's just not a viable option?
I don't know if that's feasible or not because of, you know, how long some of the events might last, and you really may not have, like, if I wanted to play Cthulhu, that whole thing was over and done, like, in 3 hours, it seemed like. I mean, they had 14 players. And no knock on them, it's just not a big event. So, you know, you can sneak in there and play that. I mean, heck, the whole tournament for Cthulhu seemed about as long as the Netrunner final, you know, so, which lasted about 3 hours for them to play the finale. So I would say probably not that. It would be pretty cool. It's a good idea, but I also think it would be, it's just, I think it's too tough to do.
All right. Were you at least a little bit tempted to knock out Derek and take his Warhammer?
No, I didn't even get to see it. I didn't even see the Warhammer, to be honest.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
So did anyone sponsor you for this event, Chuck?
Yeah, I really wanted to thank Tuan Lee from Dice House Games, the store where I play the most at, who always supports us in our game, so he sponsored me for Worlds.
All right, well, thank you for coming on, John. We really appreciate hearing your insights about Worlds.
Thanks for having me, Tiny. I really had a great time over the weekend. I made new friends, got to see old friends, hope to see all of them again. And I really would encourage anybody who hasn't been to any of these events, go to them, and also keep sticking with the game. I mean, if you haven't had some success to begin with, keep at it. The only way you get better is by keep playing the game.
All right. Well, until next week, stay classy, Westeros.
Remember, the first snow winter, size matters.